This is Mark Steiner, and we are going to do another one of our Theater Baltimore conversations. And the other week, you heard us here at Everyman Theater when we did a panel about the play Red, and fascinating panel. And now we're going to actually talk to the actors who make that play come to life. Bruce Nelson, Eric Berryman, who this is a two-man incredible production. We're here at Center Stage in some room here. Not quite sure what it is. This is, but we're in a room in the middle of Everyman. Good to see you both.
Good to see you.
Good to be here.
So it was an incredible production. And just staging the set, the costume design was all, and your interaction together as actors, which we'll talk about in a minute, I thought was just phenomenal. Two incredible actors. But let me talk to each one of you one at a time about these characters, all right? I know this is probably an ad nauseum question, Bruce.
That's not a problem.
So talk a bit about Rothko the character and your preparation for Rothko the character.
I didn't know much about abstract expressionism going into this, so I had to do some research as far as that particular art form was concerned. And then the world around Rothko, and that he had suicided in his life and the life leading up to that, and how he lived as a man possessed by his passion to, among other things, wake people up with his art, that it was a movement anyhow to express what you were feeling and put that on canvas, and it was something different. It certainly wasn't cubism that had come before. It wasn't going to be definitely pop art that would come after. It was this movement that had to do with what was going on inside of you and getting that onto the canvas. And if that took lots of time to feel the right feelings until you could make your art on the canvas, so be it. It was this pouring out of what you were feeling. And to get sort of into his mindset, it's not the kind of role that you would think about me for automatically. I'm the kind of the lighthearted guy who does those kinds of roles. So for me to do Mark meant to get to see another side of me. And I love being a part of a company that allows you that kind of freedom. And Vinny, the artistic director, says, I'm thinking about this play for you, and it's going to stretch you artistically. Here you go. And sure enough, it did. So it gave me a chance, really, to exercise those parts of me that don't get seen very often on stage or even in my own life. So the prep for me, like any role, is more technical. Who is the person? What words am I saying in the play that I don't know or understand and I need to find out about? And so it was a lot of poring over Wikipedia and books about the man, poring over those kinds of very technical things.
Eric, Ken, right? And this is an interesting work for you too, a little bit of stretch in some levels.
Yes, this is actually in the past like 2 years since I've been out of college. It's like the first play that's written in the 21st century I've done. Even though it takes place in the 50s, it's written in the 21st century, and it attracted me, I think, because it was written so well. And the characters had a lot of heart. They each had moments of shine in their own right. And I just love the message of the story. So I just thought it was a really well-written play for both characters, and it attracted me so well. But definitely a challenge in the sense that the rhythms and the vocabulary are not something that I'm used to in my daily life. I wouldn't call myself an unintelligent person. the way these guys talk was a challenge for a lot of us in the room, and it was a great challenge in that there are people that have these discourses, and this is how people used to talk back and forth before TV and phones and things like that. They would have these verbal discourses, especially as we did research. Rothko was infamous for loving a good passionate debate, and could get heated 1 minute, and then the next 5 minutes later he's sharing a drink with you. But that's just the nature of his culture and the nature of just the world he was growing up in and the painters he was growing up in. And they would fight and talk over art, and then they'd go paint and they'd come back. So to enter that world has been really really amazing and a beautiful stretch, and another way to tell a story and to reach a more diverse group of people, and also to challenge a group of people that have been continuing to come to Everyman.
I mean, one of the things about this play also, to me, the way you approached it, I mean, let's go behind the scenes a little bit more first, though, I know you went to D.C. to see the Rothko exhibit, spent some time in that place, had to go round and round to sit down and get up again and go around to watch and see it. And I think that's the part I think that people don't always hear from actors is that part of it, is what it takes to kind of mold yourself into a different person. I mean, I was showing my wife Valerie a picture of Rothko and then a picture of you, and how you kind of embody that on the stage. It's just mind blowing how you just, you know, because you don't look like Rothko now, so I'm sitting across from you. But the kind of preparation you think about in terms of your body and your intellect and how you speak and the cadence of your language and all that has to go into figuring out these two men.
You know, coming down off of having done Animal Crackers at Center Stage.
That's right.
Stage,
Groucho,
that's right.
And that's right.
And what was wonderful for me, lucky for me, is that there is video and film footage of him forever. So to get the exact movement, sound, was almost effortless. It was just a lot of immersing myself in that world and copying his movements, because I knew there would be audience members coming to expect to see that. And with Rothko, we don't know how he moved. We don't know how he sounded. We know how he stood and looked. And I knew that with costuming, we could get to some facsimile of that. His voice would have to be my voice. And I'd have to, based on the language of John Logan, the playwright, figure out, I guess, a cadence and a rhythm. You know, much of that first scene of the play is about Rothko ordering Ken around, demanding a lot of him, so that I knew that that would have to be behind my voice. Now, whether that kind of demand is particularly Rothko or not, don't know, but I knew just by the way it was written, it needed to have that kind of edge to it. And I adopted a little bit of a stance, because there are the photos of him, how he holds his arms, is pretty distinct. So I wanted to make sure that I took that on. And then it was a physical gesture that then Ken, as he developed throughout the play, could begin to copy and take on, sort of a Rothko-ism of his own. So I'm thankful that there was at least a little bit of something to go on.
You're listening to my interview with Bruce Nelson and Eric Berryman, who star in the play Red, now playing at Everyman Theater through this Sunday. We have to take a very brief break, but don't go away. We'll be right back with Bruce Nelson and Eric Berryman. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And today I'm talking with Bruce Nelson and Eric Berryman, stars of the play Red, which is playing through this Sunday at Everyman Theater. And one of the things that you just alluded to, Eric, was that alluded to Bruce that you did, Eric, was this development of your character. Because your character went through a lot of physical and emotional growth and changes. It didn't remain, you know, you weren't a character like a historical character like Rothko, where you take this character and you figure out what he was, who he was, and what to do with it. You had to kind of mold this thing as it went.
Yes. So basically, I mean, we as actors, I think, are constantly observing people and in life, constantly people in different situations, and we're always asking, well, why does somebody do that? Why do they hold their body this way? And we're doing all this to translate to moments like this of creating a character. So for Ken, he begins, eagered, yet a little naive, you know, the kind of young pup, but yet there is a sense of that he's timid in a way, and he's kind of being weighed down a little bit by the massiveness of Rothko himself, so which kind of puts him in this little bit of a shell, and he kind of pokes his head out of his shell every so often. So for me, it was trying to show the course of the time period, which is takes place over about a year and a half, 2 years, how he comes out of his shell essentially, and what moments and when and what happens when you're with somebody for a long period of time, how comfortable you get. You know, hopefully, you know, I tried to explore throughout the show, you know, each scene comfortably his language becomes more comfortable. His mannerisms become more comfortable. You start to see more of the him that he was before. You know, when he leaves, the studio and goes hangs out with his friends and gets a little, you know, has a couple of drinks, how is he then that he cannot show to Rothko in the beginning? Then he can maybe, when he gets comfortable, start to show to Rothko. Almost the kind of, you know, when you get married, you kind of discover new things about people. They start to kind of walk different ways or put on different clothes. It was kind of that type of thought. And it's, you know, like I said, it's just analyzing how people move and asking questions why. You know, it's like you look at, you know, for example, a woman, and there are some women in life that they slouch a little bit. Now, if you go back into history and maybe ask them, maybe they were repeatedly told that they had to cover up or somehow be ashamed of their bosom. So naturally, they started to develop a slight slouch because they felt ashamed, or they were always looked at there. And when they suddenly gain this freedom that, you know what, I can be who I want, and their shoulders get back, and, you know, and we as an audience, we see it very subtly, and we're not thinking, oh, yes, she is afraid of her this, and now she's exposing, but we understand it when we see it. It's almost like a subliminal kind of change that both of us kind of do and kind of convey to the audience.
What do you think of this play? I mean, I'm curious what you both think of Logan's writing and of the play itself, how he developed it. What did you all think about this play?
It's a really smart piece. It's challenging in all the right ways. I think emotionally it gives an actor, particularly both of us, gives us a nice emotional journey. Has little islands and pockets of where we can be kind of contained and soft, but then has moments of great explosion and gnashing of teeth. And I love that there are dense concepts that I have to work through and move through and make sense of, not only for myself, but instructing the audience, too, that they aren't easy. Those Apollonian concepts that get talked about aren't easy to understand, and I love being able to make sense of those for an audience. So in a 90-minute play, what's not to like about a 90-minute play? I mean, if it's well done and it's 3 hours, great. If it's well done and it's 90 minutes, well, you're home early.
And even better.
Yeah, and you're to bed early, yeah.
That's true.
Yes.
So for the actors and for the audience, yeah. Both, right? And it is an intellectual play.
Yes.
I mean, it's a deeply intellectual play. The concepts that come out, whether you're talking about Nietzsche or the other artists or the writers and the sense of what goes behind making a work of art, I mean it's something to chew on and wrestle with.
Oh, very much so. And Rothko says this one thing to Ken very early on. He asks him, "Have you read Nietzsche? Have you read Freud? Have you read these people?" And then Ken is like, "No, I have not." And Rothko's like, you know, you need to know about music, you know, drama, history, archaeology, anthropology. And that was something that really rang true with me when I first read the play, is that I kind of feel that way about all artists. Whatever your extension of this art world is, you should know about everything in life, because we as artists, whether we be dancers, visual artists, sculptors, actors, are always trying to express and to convey life as we see it. But in order to know life, portray life, we must experience life. So just everything that Rothko says in regards to painting, what a painter should know and everything he should know, I was told that and I believe that as an actor. So I think we're always constantly trying to grapple with those ideas as well. And it's funny, I want to say something really fast. Mm-hmm. You know, Bruce said that you know, you may think of him or think of this play and go, you know, he may not be the person you think of for this. It's funny because when the artistic director, Vinnie Lancisi, said, you know, he was like, I think we're going to do this play. You know, let's do it. You know, I want you to do, you know, this role. And I think I'm going to put Bruce in it to play Rothko. I went, yes, of course. That's funny. I immediately just said, yes, of course, that's the perfect person to do it. And I think the reason being is because I think that this role, like the many great kind of leading male roles out there, requires a great actor. And in my belief, you know, a great actor can morph and change and do whatever. So I think that That's why I just thought that was funny that, he himself, you said that, I don't know if people would think of me. I said, oh, yep, Bruce Nelson, automatically. Yeah, and he proves the point. It gets back to the whole, what actors originally were, We were always chameleons. We were always ones to play different roles interchangeably. There was no like, this is the comedy, but this is just the TV. This is just the, in this society, we've gotten so, we're always trying to label and be specific. Whatever happened is to the actor that does it all and the general, you call them in to do everything, and that's what I'm trying to get to.
And thank you very much. It also, I think, in a way speaks to the pretty significant blind spot that I have when it comes to exactly knowing what I'm right for. I'm often stymied when someone asks, what's my bucket list as far as roles out there to do? And I have no idea. I just figure the next role is the one that Vinny or someone's going to say, here, do this one. And I always assume that I'm going to figure out how to make the role make sense. But as far as knowing from the outside what role looks and feels right, I don't have that ability to see myself in particular roles. I guess I have the ability to see myself in stuff that people have gotten used to me in, less so what I would be right for. Just I don't have that outside eye. Maybe that's to my advantage that I don't kind of know exactly what I'm right for. It lends itself maybe to more chameleon-like goings-on, let's say.
And that's part of being an actor, too. The chameleon is part of who you are. Yeah. You have to kind of shed skins and new colors and become something that you clearly are not.
Yeah, I mean, to become something that we are not, to show the audience things that they are, in a way. We have to kind of... someone told me something one time. They said that we, actors suffer so the audience does not have to. And I thought that was really quite profound, that, we do what we have to do in order to either allow you to not go through this, but you understand it, or that, you go along the experience, with us. You may not get time out of your day to think about these things or have this, intellectual discourse or be able to feel this way. And ultimately, everything is just rehearsal until the audience gets there. If we were to do a show tonight and there was nobody there, it'd be rehearsal to me, because it really isn't a performance until the audience gets there. And I think that we as audience members, and I'm an audience member as well as an actor, as I go to see shows, we have to remember that we share the same four walls as the actors. Just because the stage is in front of us and we're sitting down, we forget that actually we're all in the same four-walled space of the theater. And that is the whole performance space. So you are the silent secondary character. And I think that's actually something that this play and our director, we kind of reinforced. We have these moments where we're constantly looking out at the fourth wall at these invisible paintings, and we're referencing them, and we're almost including the audience in our reference, and things that we say about these paintings, could be said about audience, members.
There was an audience member recently who saw the show and felt so on edge, because we were addressing the audience from almost moment one. We're talking to them as if it's directed at them, when it really is directed at these paintings. And it was very off-putting for this one patron to be addressed so pointedly. And, that's what theater does sometimes, either directly, like in this play, or indirectly. It wants to, I guess, get under your skin to a certain extent.
I mean, I would think just the way, when you read the play, the staging says that, that the paintings are at the end of the stage and you're looking out at the audience and those are where the paintings are. So clearly Logan, the playwright, that's what he had in mind. He had in mind to put people through that, mm-hmm. the audience through that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that was a brilliant stroke of staging genius on his part to make that the case, because it would be a very different play if the paintings were upstage and we turned to look at the paintings rather than turned out to address that larger, well, the audience and the paintings out above the audience.
I also enjoyed inside the play the paintings that were done. I understand the woman who made the paintings who painted in the Rothko style. They're amazing, amazingly done.
We have, I forget our scenic artist's name, but she is remarkable. Amy, what was the last name? Amy Kellett, and she is quite brilliant. She's been our scenic designer, painter, for I don't know how many years now, but when she isn't, like she's doing now, making a faux brick wall for the next play, she is creating beautiful Rothko facsimiles.
Yeah. I'd buy one. They're not too expensive. the other part of this is just the role that this kind of theater plays, because you're members of the company. It's probably not a full-time salary, but though many would like to do that, you're members of a company, which is not something that happens very often anymore. That is kind of lost in theater. I mean, Arena Theater in D.C. For years was a paid acting company, right? That ended. So this is what does that mean to be in a company of men and women that you may constantly work with or create with over the course of a year or two or whatever that is?
To me, it means that they're a group of people and an organization that share a common belief in what art is and the way stories are told. And it also means that we respect each other. We respect each other to invite, you know, that you know, the head of, you know, this organization, you know, the artistic director, he respected all of us as artists to want to bring us along that fold to help him tell stories continually throughout his career, and throughout the theater's career. And it's just fun. You know, it's fun knowing that you're going to go into a room with people that are going to be on their game just as much as you plan to be. You know, it's like there's no guessing. There's no guessing that, you know, well, I wonder if this person is it's not even a matter if they're going to be good or bad, but it's a matter of I wonder if this person is going to, if they're going to be on their game, if they're going to, the seriousness, you know, the professionalism, the, you know, people in this company have taken a almost a kind of silent vow of this is my profession. You know, this is my life. You know, whether you know, we're constantly doing, whether we're in a show every single show or, you know, once a season or whatever, these are people that say there's something we value in what's being done in this community and at this theater, and we want to be a part of it, and we want people to see it as well.
There's a vulnerability that comes almost instantly with people who you know and who know you. You're ready to unload. And when you're an actor who is plunked down in the middle of a group of strangers, which is the norm, actors who don't know each other coming together to do a show, I would imagine there's a bit of a learning curve about getting to know the people around me and feeling comfortable and safe enough to show all of my colors. And being a part of a company allows for that. I guess the downside, in a way, it makes for a very challenging season choosing for Vinny. He's trying to accommodate a group of actors with a variety of abilities and strong suits, and he wants to challenge them, and there's an age range, and there are a certain number of us, so there are a lot of factors going into the kind of plays he can pick and pick well for a season and satisfy the audiences. That's a maddening job, I would think.
And to piggyback off of what Bruce said about the vulnerability that we're allowed with each other being in a company, I think this is a perfect example of that. I'm the youngest member of the company, and this is the first time me and Bruce have worked together. And actually, before rehearsing this show, I think we might have had, you know, maybe a total of maybe 5-10 minutes of conversation time, you know, together as human beings, as people. So, and we just kind of, this immediately just, there was a comfortability that, I don't know, maybe this building allowed, maybe just the that we shared the same kind of values in a way, or what have you. But I think this is a perfect example of that vulnerability from two people that this is their first time working together, and it wasn't difficult in my eye. You know, I mean, we had a great time in rehearsal. You know, the director is now, he was talking to me. He said, I may have to find a comedy for us to do together. He said, because you guys are fun together.
That's a good idea. And Donald is an incredible director. Oh, yeah. I mean, an incredible director. And was your teacher at School for the Arts, and Baltimore School for the Arts. I mean, I think he's amazing. Everything I've seen him do, he's so meticulous, watches everything from the angle of what's on the wall to just how you move your arms to, I mean, he's in it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't stop you from being who you want to be, but he's in it completely.
What's brilliant about him is he has the perfect balance of that meticulous attention to detail and trusting his actors
right.
to know when and where and how to do what needs to be done, and guiding them very gently from the outside. There isn't some kind of rigorous micromanaging like you do get from some directors, this sort of every move and every emotional up and down is choreographed. No, that it's so organically constructed. It's a lovely thing to be given lots and lots and lots of freedom and a lot of praise along the way that, good, you're on the right track and keep going. Permission, as it were.
One other thing about this play I want to kind of bring out, I think there was a huge debate in the world of theater about this notion of colorblind casting that we always talk about. That, you know, back and forth, Harvard, Yale, yes, no, we should, you shouldn't, you should never do it. But one of the interesting things about this, the character you're playing, Ken, was not necessarily written for somebody who's black. But the beautiful part about the way this play is staged and your role in and all of you in it is that you're Eric Berryman, an actor in this part who happens to be black. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Which is different than colorblind casting. It's just casting a good actor in a role.
Very much so. That was also one of the things that attracted me to this play is that it frustrated me seeing the continual casting of this show over the years since it premiered in 2009, 2010. People have continued to cast my particular role, Ken, basically kind of modeling him off of the Broadway casting and the original casting. In the script, there is nothing that specifies his race, his culture, his religion, nothing specifies it. In fact, my character is fictional. My character doesn't even exist. My name is not even mentioned in the course of the play. It's mentioned in the program. Rothko did have a number of assistants throughout his later in his time, particularly during the Seagram mural commission. He had an assistant, a man by the name of Dan Rice, who was in his late 20s or early 30s. But beyond the fact that there was an assistant, everything about my character is totally fictional, which gave me even more incentive to go, why has no one, you know, got out of this kind of mold that was kind of created, you know, in this world? And, you know, 21st century still here in this country, you know, something that's not racially specified is universally white. That's, I mean, essentially what it is. And so just very, very humbled that people at Everyman here, you know, shared my same thoughts about this show and what the character was. And nor do I think they would, you know, if it was, you know, specified in some other way, would they have said, oh, well, let's try a new take. You know, they would try to honor whatever was specified. And I think that inadvertently, by me happening to be an actor of color, it brings out another layer to this show that we actually didn't really even play around with in rehearsal. There in no way did we say, you know, let's talk about how when you say black or white, what that also means. No, I mean, I know it existed for me in some points, but no time am I trying to play that up. We are talking about painting. We are talking about colors and art and painting. It has nothing to do, you know, really with that, but it brings another layer, and audiences are seeing that and are enjoying it and are raising more questions about art. I mean, let's talk about beyond the fact that, you know, there's a white and a black on stage. One lady brought up to me that it's amazing that,
you know, it's a Jew and a black. Rothko being a Jewish artist in a black yard. What message is that saying to cultures that have had similar experiences that, and now in the art world, he had to change his name, you know, which is something that's beautiful in the play. He says, they had too many Jewish painters, so I had to change my name to make it universally white. You know, in a way, I had to go to Mark, you know, which is... So I think that's a fascinating new element that kind of inadvertently has happened, you know, in this. And I would hope to see more liberties taken with this play. You know, I don't think there should be a, you know, Puerto Rican Rothko or anything like that. You know, I mean, stay true to the man. But I mean, you know, people are free to do, you know, what they want, you know, but yeah.
And to piggyback on that, yeah. You know, as a gay actor, Rothko is not gay, and there's a different kind of, I guess, colorblind casting that goes on, and it's just not as obvious. You know, I don't wear my diversity as obviously as Eric does. And that was a real concern for me early on in my career. Could I, for lack of a better phrase, drop those gay stereotypes, which are part of my makeup as a person, as a gay man? Could I drop those and adopt the stereotypically straight behavior and be believable? And I was a concern of mine. Would I be pigeonholed in my career? And fortunately, I was able to adopt a wide variety of ways of being. And stereotype, it's unfortunate that it exists, and I guess it exists because there's some modicum of truth in the stereotype. But it's a different kind of casting that goes on more, you know, plenty often.
I never thought about that angle of it, but you're right, Bruce. That's interesting. That never kind of occurred to me. But I think this is just a very powerful production, and I think that what we're seeing here at this table talking together at Everyman Theater right now is what it takes to be an actor and who these two men are who are approaching this very powerful play and the roles they're playing. I think that... you both made these characters. Because you could play... Let me just say this part, and then we'll conclude. But you could play this play in any way. I could see people playing Rothko way over the top. You know, constantly... like that. You know, just on over, you know. And playing your role in a sense in a much more confused way and not as kind of with the power and strength that you bring to the character. But so the choices you made and worked with in terms of Donald, how you, I think that's very important. I mean, because it's the subtleties of the characters you bring out, because the subtleties the actors see and do that makes this play fun for us to sit in the audience and watch.
Certainly an angle for this particular part, Rothko, he could be angry and shout all the time. And to show that one dimension isn't enough. We have to see him not that to get the full effect.
Well, this has been great. I want to thank you both for allowing us to come in. I know you have a play coming up this evening, and you need to get ready and prepare and pull back a little bit. So, Eric Berryman, Bruce Nelson, I appreciate the time you've given us here at the theater today to let me come in and be part of your life for just a minute. It was great. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. So as we leave you, I really want to encourage you to come see Red here at Everyman Theater. It plays through December the 8th, a play not to be missed. The box office number is 410-752-2208, or you can go to www.everymantheaterre.org. Don't miss the play. Red is here till December the 8th.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. To hear this show again, podcast past shows, and find out information about our guests and the work they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And you can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.